The trick to exposing people to something new is getting them into the concert hall in the first place, and of course creating really interesting programs. That's what conductor Dennis Russell Davies is all about. He's built his career on exploring new music. That's what his new recording is about as well. It's called Now and Then, and it's featured on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher. Dennis, more than anything else, you're associated with new music, and that association actually goes back to the early years of your career in the 1960s, and that's when you met the two composers whose transcriptions are featured on your new recording. Can you tell me a little bit about how you met these two people and how they've impacted your life?
They impacted my life because, as you pointed out, new music is something I've always done, but I've done it in the context of the major repertory. And this is something I learned from these two men, Bruno Maderna, Luciano Berio, and by the way, also Pierre Boulez. All three of these great conductors and great composers also were very much involved with music of their own tradition and their own past. This music was reflected in their music, but it was also reflected in the way they made programs, the way they embedded new pieces in the texture of a tradition that, of course, is 300 to 400 years old for them.
Tell me a little bit more about Bruno Maderna and why his transcriptions are so significant or so important to you.
Bruno Maderna was, at the time I met him, he had just turned 50. He was a wonderful conductor. I heard him conduct Mahler's Seventh with the Philadelphia Orchestra. He conducted the Chicago Symphony, conducted most of the great orchestras around the world, but his career was also as a composer. He was a very generous man. He was a man who, with a wonderful musical education as his background, someone who was steeped in the early music of Italy, someone who performed it regularly, and he wanted to have a chance to really play this music with the modern symphony orchestras. And so that's what inspired him, I think, to make these transcriptions. We have a tendency to ghettoize music. We have specialists who do everything. And Bruno didn't like specialists. He wanted to play Vivaldi next to Bruckner, and he wanted to play Mahler next to composers like Corellian from his traditional past, and that's what he did.
So how did he do that? What did he do in these transcriptions that allowed them to be played back-to-back with composers like Bruckner, for example?
Well, some of them are vocal pieces, actually. Especially the works by Gabrielli that he transcribed are from anywhere from 6 to 12 voices, and they were vocal pieces. Bruno had an ear for what these pieces sounded like in the original, and as a conductor and as a great conductor, he knew how to transcribe these pieces for a modern symphony orchestra that evoked the original sound, but gave the musicians freedom to really make the sound that they were best at, and that's the sound of a modern instrument.
It's interesting that you brought up Gabrielli, because the piece that's featured on this recording was his last transcription done in 1972. Can you tell me a little bit more about this work, the Canzone a Tre Cori?
Well, as I say, it was a work originally that was a vocal piece. He has done several pieces by Gabrielli, and I think the magnificent thing about this transcription is simply the bigness and the depth of the sound. The way that the melodic lines are interwoven. But the colors and the impressive sound that the instruments make together. It's a work that will fill a modern concert hall, and at the same time has the intimacy of a chamber piece. ¶¶
Now, he had a fascination with the Italian late Renaissance and Baroque music, and several of these composers are featured on this recording. And these, I guess you would say, they're lesser-known composers, people like Frescobaldi and Ligrenzi. Tell me a little bit about some of these composers and the works that are featured here, and what you believe sets these works apart and makes them unique and special enough for you to decide to feature them on this recording.
Well, to tell you the truth, Frescobaldi I knew about because I'd had to study him in school, and I had had a chance to hear some of his organ pieces, but I never actually had come to terms or come to grips with performing a piece because I didn't know there was a way to do that. A composer like Ligrenzi, I never heard of before, so when I was asked by ECM to work with them on this production, for me, it was a new education because several of the composers I'd never performed before.
Oh, that's pretty fascinating. So that almost gets back to you exploring new music in a way.
Well, it is. For me, it was new music, and it was what Bruno was trying to achieve. Bruno wanted to make this music from the rich tradition of the Italian Renaissance available to modern audience and modern musicians. And you see, a work like Gabrielli's in the original is, of course, wonderful to hear. But how many people really would have a chance to do that? And with these transcriptions, I could do them in any concert hall in the world with any fine orchestra.
There's a work on here by Wilhelm von Wassenauer, who was a Dutch nobleman and a composer, but it wasn't appropriate for a nobleman to be a composer. So for many years, his works were attributed to Pier Galeazzi. Tell me about this piece that you feature on here.
Well, it's a work when I recorded it and when I performed it in concert, I thought it was by Pier Galeazzi. It only turned out after I had done it that they learned that it had been done by this Dutch nobleman, about whom I frankly know very little.
I love the idea that you were learning of these composers, because it gets me to thinking about how we introduce people to classical music. And I'm curious, do you think that what you might consider, you know, something that's more new engages new audiences? Or what do you think? Maybe it's a gateway to get them to explore other more familiar composers like Mozart or Bach, people who maybe think that they don't have an affinity for classical music?
I think it works both ways. I think we have a traditional audience that knows and loves the classics, and when you find composers whose work is based on their interpretations of classical pieces, and here I would say Luciano Berio, here I would say Bruno Maderna, for example, these are composers that an audience that only knows traditional music could find a way to relate to. But the opposite is true. If you have a composer like, say, Philip Glass, or composers like John Adams, a composer like John Cage, a composer like Terry Riley, or a composer like Michael Nyman. These are composers who also come from a tradition, and they have a special audience that doesn't necessarily relate to classical performance as we know it. Once we get them in the hall, we have a chance to open their ears to other things.
So the trick is just to give them a chance, right?
I think the trick is to get the people to come. And there, I think, programs that are colorful, that have a lot of variety, that have a surprise in them, in a sense, what Maderna and Berio did years ago as they were performing and conducting, and Boulez, I think this is the key to expanding our audience and our repertory.
You've brought up Luciano Berio, and his piece on this recording is also considered a transcription. Why is that?
Well, it's a transcription of his own piece. Luciano was a very practical composer and practical man. He made a series of pieces called sequenza, which were solo pieces, much like the Bach solo suites for different string instruments. And his sequenzas were also solo instruments, but he found a way to take them as the basis for a work with instrument and either an accompanying ensemble or an orchestra. And in this case, this sequenza for guitar has become Chemin 5. And there was a series of these pieces called Chemin, and this is what Luciano did. He was able to, frankly, make good use of something he had begun to work on, and then he could develop it even further.
And this is the premiere recording of this work with Pablo Marquez?
That's right. It's the first time the piece has been recorded. It reminds me of, several composers have used their pieces in a couple of different ways. I love to play Beethoven's Sonata Opus 14, Number 1 in E major. But it's also a string quartet in F major, the very same piece.
You are giving me so much to think about.
Well, that's what Luciano and Bruno did. They with their programming and their way of making program, they made us learn to listen to pieces in a different way.
And I read another interview that you did a couple of years ago, and you said what they did for you was helped you to have a point of view or develop a point of view about this music.
Well, I think, you know, we as I said, we love specialization, and we can restrict ourselves, and many people do, to a repertory that is in sort of a geographical location between Hamburg and Vienna, and a period that lasts about 120 years. But our music tradition is frankly much, much greater than that. And many, many more years. I've just been reading a wonderful new book called Bach's World, which is the whole story of the history of the family before it culminates in Johann Sebastian. A wonderful history of more than 100 years of great music that we never get a chance to hear. There's so much to look for and find.
I know you were also friends with Aaron Copland. Can you share anything memorable about your experience with Copland, either as a friend or as a musician?
Well, would be nice to think. He liked what I did. He was very generous with me. He was very kind. And when I was with the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, he came on a couple of occasions, conducted the orchestra. We had a wonderful program that we shared where Aaron in the second half would conduct his hit piece, Appalachian Spring. And in the first half, we played his piano quartet, and I did an orchestration of his short symphony, the Symphony No. 2 for the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, and he loved it. He said he couldn't tell the difference, which probably wasn't true, but I took it as a compliment. I had him also at the Cabrillo Festival, and Aaron loved a good time. He loved the fact that his music, he was in his 70s at the time that I came to know him and to work with him. And so he enjoyed the fact that he was still being very actively involved at a time when other newer composers were beginning to take over the public attention.
How long were you with the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra?
I was there from 1972 to 1980. It was 8 very formative and wonderful years, and it's like your first love. I've never forgotten it. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Well, one of the things they're known for is the fact that they do what you were suggesting, that you put something familiar on the program, and then you put a couple of things that are less familiar or maybe even challenge our ears a bit. And is that something you were doing at the same time when you were there? Is that one of the reasons you loved that ensemble?
Very definitely. We had guest composers who were part of our seasons. The second season, John Cage was there almost for every concert. that we did in the subscription series, and he wrote two or three new pieces for the orchestra. Hans Werner Henze came and was also in resonance with the orchestra. Luciano Berio was there once as a guest. Of course, Copeland came. It was a wonderful time. And Keith Jarrett, not only as a pianist, but as a composer. So my idea and my feeling, which I was able to develop there, was that composers belong with orchestras together. They need to come in and out as they please, be part of the audience, and people need to be used to seeing them.
Well, and that makes sense then that you were very involved with the American Composers Forum as well.
Yeah, the American Composers Orchestra.
Sure.
Well, I was one of the founders, and I was music director there 25 years. And we just, I was last week in New York. We were celebrating the 40th anniversary of the orchestra. It's been a very important institution, and several of the composers also who were involved in what used to be the Minnesota Composers Forum were also involved with the American Composers Orchestra.
So I guess my final question is, the title of this recording is simple, yet it seems very explanatory, Now and Then. Tell me a little bit about this theme.
Well, I wish I'd thought of the title, but I'm glad somebody did. When I received my copy of the final version of the compact disc, this title, Now and Then, I thought, this is wonderful. Somebody had a really good idea, because, of course, it's the music of the past and the present, which is being reflected in a music from our very distant past. So it's a wonderful title, and I think it describes exactly, in very simple words, what this recording is all about.
Yeah, it's invigorating the past. I love that. I'm not that familiar with the orchestra featured on this recording.
It's called the Southern Switzerland Radio Orchestra. It has Svizzera Italiana. The part of Switzerland that's Italian-speaking. As you certainly know, there's several major sections in Switzerland. Each has its own language, and they all speak each other's language, but this is the Italian-speaking part. And they have a very, very good orchestra. It's based in Lugano, which is a very beautiful city. And they have a wonderful concert hall and a wonderful recording studio. And I went there as a guest. I was invited to do this project there. And I went and we did a concert. And then we did several months later, then we recorded the works that we performed in concert.
So having those Italian roots, do they have a passion for this Italian late Renaissance music?
You know, yes, there's Italian roots, but I mean, frankly speaking, our orchestras today are so international, especially in Europe. The European orchestras are very, very international. The concertmaster on this recording was an excellent violinist from Warsaw who's been in the orchestra several years as concertmaster. It's an international group.
Why do you think composers like Berio, Moderna, Copeland Cage, William Schumann, Pierre Boulez, why do you think they have trusted you to play their music and bring it to life?
Well, I guess I hear what they're trying to, you know, I'll put this another way. Writing music is a really difficult thing. It's one of the most difficult challenges I can imagine. Notation is it's an incredible challenge. It's taking notes on paper and making them live and breathe is something that you do not only with Haydn and Beethoven and Mozart, but especially with newer composers who are also confronted with the limitations of what you write down. If we only played Beethoven and Haydn exactly the way we saw it on a page of paper, no one would listen to it. The performer brings this music to life. I was passionate about this music, I was passionate about old music, and I was very, very committed to helping these composers, even as a young man, to helping these composers realize their dream, if you want, to realize what they heard in their hearts and minds, I think they recognize it, and I'm grateful they did. It's been a major part of my career.
I think, I don't know if growing up in Toledo had anything to do with your passion, but, you know, I mean, a lot of times when we think of progressive musicians, we don't think of Toledo. How do you think this became your passion, to explore new music?
Well, I had a wonderful musical education in Toledo, Ohio, a wonderful life as a young person. I was open, I was encouraged to be open, and when I ended up in New York, it was fertile ground. I guess I was open to challenges and interested in what was new. So my background in the Midwest is something that served me well, and I think everybody, you know, I think you probably are more in the Midwest. You live in Minnesota, I believe. A lot of people really think they fly from New York and Boston to the West Coast and sort of ignore what's in the middle. And what's in the middle is the heart of the United States.
Is there anything else you want to add? Anything else you want us to know about you or this recording?
Well, I think I'm very appreciative of the chance to do this work in honor of these two composers who meant so much to me when I was young. Young and just starting out and badly in need of an international music education, and these two wonderful men were very much a part of that. And I think Luciano Berio and Bruno Maderna, who, by the way, in 2020, I believe, will be the 100th anniversary of his birth, are two composers who definitely need to be performed more often. It's not always easy music, especially to perform, but it's very, very invigorating and gratifying, not just for the listener, but also for the performer.
The new recording is called Now and Then, and the conductor is Dennis Russell Davies. I'm Julie Almacher, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. Next week, you'll hear a new concerto commissioned by violinist Anna Kiko Myers on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media.